Hello, thanks for joining us. This week we'll be comparing signings, finding out about football philosophers, and we'll be asking why some English Premier League games are on the telly in about 180 countries and none of them are this one. So without further ado, the football's on. Yes, welcome to the show. Our guest this week, our home and away Liverpool fan, Adam Rowe, and Blackburn supporting and France resident, Ian Moore.
What's happening, mate? How are we?
All right. Adam, aside from what happening on Sunday, what have you noticed this week?
Excuse me, why has that caveat been put in?
No, because we're going to be talking about Sunday in a minute, so I thought we'll do something else first.
Why can't I just spend this entire show eulogising about Liverpool beating Man United 7-0. What am I actually here for if I can't just say I noticed the despair on Erik ten Hag's face with his little Pep Guardiola tribute jumper he had on, trying to rock up at Anfield? Like, his interview midweek saying, oh, it doesn't matter, like, it's just another game, it's the same size pitch, it doesn't matter what the noise is like, it's just like playing any other game. It wasn't, was it? We won 7-0. That's what I've noticed, Ian. We won 7-0.
Now, you know what? I have to say, Adam, that is probably fair enough. All right, Ian, what have you noticed from your sumptuous Chateau Francais? Right? Well, it means, by the way, sorry, Ian, I should say to people, it means sumptuous French chateau for the tiny minority of our viewers who are not bilingual.
Okay, that tiny minority. What I noticed this weekend was how few, until the Liverpool game, how few strikers are actually scoring goals. I know that, you know, clubs like Chelsea need to buy a striker, but there just aren't strikers out there scoring goals. Haaland stopped.
I know what you mean. Strikers aren't getting the goals. They're Arsenal's, not. Of course, are all injured at the moment. But yes, maybe Haaland has taken all the striking power.
I think he has. He's like Thor. There's nobody else around, is there? And also, as Adam mentioned, Ten Hag's Guardiola tribute jumper. He's been wearing that same jumper now for about 3 months. And if you notice, the around the roll neck, the elastic's starting to go. And that, if he'd looked in the mirror, and he would have worked out before the match that everything was going to go wrong. If your roll neck's baggy, you're not going to win a match.
That is so on brand, Ian. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, the curse of the football's on strikes again. Last week, we called him Erik 10 out of 10 Hag. This week, he almost conceded 10. There was a fair bit of excitement this weekend, but the headline result was the frankly astonishing Liverpool 7, Manchester United 0, battering at Anfield. It's the sort of score that used to be written on the Vidi printer in letters. And if you don't know what a Vidi printer is, ask your dad. An amazing game, and the result machine that Erik ten Hag referred to were for once on the wrong end of a big one. Adam, Sunday must have been fun.
Sunday was very fun. I just got back off holiday last week, so I haven't been well. I turned down a ticket. It's one of the only games I've missed all season, and was just feeling sorry for myself being a bit sick all day. And the second that the fifth goal went in, I just turned to my missus and I was like, I'm going to the pub and I'm going now. I was like, I'd rather be sick, more sick this week, and go and celebrate this, because in a year, I won't remember being sick, but I will remember the night I was singing Liverpool parody songs in Pogue Mahone's until midnight, celebrating a 7-0 win over Man United. Quite a special day, especially in the context of the season as well.
Cool. I mean, the stat I've heard that I love is that Liverpool have scored 34% of their goals in two games against Bournemouth and Manchester United. Ian, there was a plane flying over Anfield that said FSG out, Klopp in. Do you long for the days when planes didn't fly over stadiums with pithy messages? I mean, it's essentially a flying tweet, isn't it? Yeah. And has it ever worked? Has an owner ever looked up and thought, well, they have a point, don't they, really?
It's a very limited social media, isn't it? Because not everybody can get out in a plane and respond to that.
A reply plane. I like the idea of that.
It'll clog up the skies. It could be very dangerous. The thing that I watching that match yesterday was just how quickly United fell apart. Bruno Fernandes, who is a wonderful player, but let's face it, a bit of a toe rag. He was just so babyish, embarrassing.
He is always
babyish. But that, I mean, he even pushed the linesman. Why the hell was he not?
He did
not booked for that, or sent off, deported.
That was funny. Well, he would have liked. He would have liked it, wasn't he? He was upset that he wasn't taken off in the 75th minute. I mean, Adam, it's hardly in the spirit of Terry Butcher with a blood-soaked bandage wrapped round his head, school of captaincy, is it?
I think he was absolutely embarrassing. Like, I'd rather sit here and talk about, you know, how good Liverpool were than how bad Man United were and how babyish some of their players were. But Fernandes, like, he's supposed to be the captain at the minute, especially why, you know, Harry Maguire's not playing every game, and I think he's still their club captain. I'm not totally up to date with it, but Fernandes, like, being the captain on the pitch and being, he's begging to come off as his team's getting absolutely mauled. Like, at one point, Canate, like, brushed his chest with his fingers and he went down screaming, holding his face. I don't understand why players are doing that.
I thought he was going to have reconstructive surgery after that moment. I genuinely did.
Then he pushes the linesman. Like, he's lucky to stay on the pitch and not get sent off. Like, I know Man United are having a much better season than Liverpool, and certainly better seasons than United have had in the past few years. But you've got to look at that and say, when the sun's not shining on them, are they going to go to bits? I don't know whether United are now going to have a few weeks where they go off the rails a bit. I think people also forget there was a bit of a, up until like the past sort of 8 years when Manchester City have been so dominant with the Carabao Cup.
Yes.
Whoever won that would then go on like a 10-game couldn't buy a win run. And then Manchester City, Liverpool and Chelsea have changed that over the past few years because they're the ones who've won it and they've been sort of up near the top of the table and they've sort of kicked on a bit. I think this might be the start of United having that. They might bring that curse back. United are now going to be in the race to cling on to third and fourth. Like, they will. Like, if they have two more bad results in the next 4 weeks, then it'll get an awful lot closer. If Newcastle manage to kick back on, Tottenham are going to try and kick on as well, especially if Tottenham get knocked out of Europe and they're just going to focus on the league. Liverpool are basically out of Europe, probably, because you're not going to go to the Bernabeu and overturn a 5-2. Liverpool are going to have no other distractions. They're hitting form at the right time. 13 points now in 5 games, no goals conceded. Liverpool have turned the corner. Barring that 45-minute spell against Real Madrid at Anfield, if that hadn't happened, look at what Liverpool have done over the past month. It's proper, like, turning stuff around. And if I'm a Man United fan, after yesterday, I'm getting a bit nervous.
Yeah. Now, obviously, Adam could speak about this game for the rest of the show, and I know he wants to, but there was other football this weekend.
No, there wasn't.
The BT... well, actually, Adam, as an Arsenal fan, I have to say there was. We'll get to that. In the BT Sport game on Saturday morning, it was Abu Dhabi against Saudi Arabia, not the government, obviously, as Manchester City took on Newcastle United. City won 2-0. But Pep Guardiola is apparently not talking to the Premier League after claiming that his side are unfairly treated by referees. Hang on, let me find the world's smallest violin. Adam, I'll ask you this first. Do you think there's a case for refereeing decisions being inversely linked to how much spare cash your club has got in the bank? Like, if your owner has an offshore account, you only get one penalty a month, something like that.
I think it's absolutely hilarious for either of the Manchester clubs to suggest that they are unfavourably treated by referees at all. Like, if you look at decisions over the past few years, Anthony Taylor is from Manchester and he referees either a Liverpool game or one of the Manchester games every single weekend. Whenever we're coming up to a Liverpool City game, I just know Anthony Taylor's going to either be refereeing the game or he's going to be on VAR. Like, it's incredible for them to be blaming it, like, their lack of being top of the table on anything other than the fact it hasn't quite worked out properly, the new system with going with a proper traditional number nine and the fact that Mikel Arteta has got stuff right at Arsenal as well.
Yeah, I mean, Ian, as a neutral in this fight, it's hard with this game to take sides, isn't it? Newcastle against City. It's like choosing your favourite despot, isn't it, really?
No, I prefer the Switzerland route on these matches. I just sit it out and watch it like some benign spectator. It doesn't interest me. It's so out of this world, the money that's involved with these clubs, and then they're still pretending or making this kind of facade that they are still of the people. I find it a hard watch. I really do.
Yeah. There's also been, we'll move on then. There's also been an ongoing discussion this week about the amount of time that goalkeepers waste and how long they hold on to the ball. There used to be a 6-second rule, but that now seems less a hard and fast rule and more an abstract concept. In the Aston Villa v Arsenal game, the Villa keeper Emi Martinez kept it at half-time and had to be stopped from taking it home with him for a month. Adam, they all do it. Should we just accept it and add on a couple of hours at the end of the game?
I'd like to see what they did during the World Cup, where they just go, waste as much time as you want and we're going to add all of it on. I think every stadium install a massive Premier League verified time board, and when the ball goes out for a throw-in...
Clock.
Yeah, a big clock,
is what
right?
You're talking about.
A clock, that's the word. Get a big clock, a digital clock in every ground, and when the ball goes out for a throw-in or a goal kick, have VAR press pause, and the second it crosses the line, he presses play again, and when it hits 45, no matter where the ball is on the pitch, even if it's on its way to goal, it's half-time, and when it hits 90, it's full-time. The second the ball's out of play, it stops. When it's back in, it starts again. Why are we watching footballers like take time out of our game? Like, what for?
I agree.
What?
It's very analog, isn't it? It's very analog. I mean, the question has been asked as to whether timekeeping should be taken out of the referee's hands. It's not easy to referee a top level game and keep time. I mean, Ian, we all know comedians who can't even tell jokes and look at their watch simultaneously.
No, I mean, I always struggle with that as well. Have I done 18? Yeah. Have I done 19? I have no idea what I've done. And yet these referees are supposed to have eyes in the back of their head for everything else that's going on. Like Adam said, a clock in the stadium works. I mean, they do that in rugby league, don't they? It's stopped, and the minute the time's up, the hooter goes off, and that's it. No matter where the ball is. Why can't they do that in football? It just take a job away from the ref.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's it for part one. In part two, as well as Who Am I, we'll be asking, who would you rather have? And wondering why the most watched league in the world sometimes can't be watched here. See you after the break. Part two of The Football Zone with Ian Moore, Adam Rowe and me, Ian Stone. Now, there have been a number of high-profile signings in the Premier League, and some have worked better than others. We thought we'd do a bit of compare and contrast. In the blue corner of Manchester, we have the hulking, be-ponytailed Norse marksman Erling Haaland, and in the red corner, the no-nonsense Brazilian Casemiro. Let's start with Casemiro. Adam, I don't expect you to have too many good things to say on national telly about a Manchester United player, but he's one of those players you only realise how good he is when he's not there. In the same way that things fall apart in my house when my missus goes away for a weekend.
First of all, I think it's absolutely criminal that we're not including Darwin Nunes in this debate, but we'll move on.
Okay, noted.
I think Casemiro had a really tough day Sunday just because Liverpool were really up for it. He got pressed from, you know, the word go. I think if we're discussing who's been the better signing, him or Haaland, it's quite difficult to give it to Casemiro just because I don't think you can blame Haaland for the fact City are on top of the league, because Haaland has done his job. He has scored more goals per game than anyone has ever done in Premier League history. He's probably going to break the record come the end of the season. But has he improved? And when they signed him in the summer, I was getting laughed at by some of my Man City mates when I was saying, I just feel like he's going to score all the goals that Sterling and Gabriel Jesus did together. He's just going to get all of them. But City can't possibly score more goals. They're winning 4-5 and 6-0 every week. They're not going to start putting 12 past teams. It's just not going to happen.
Well, so, not unless they play Man United, obviously.
I think it's hard not to give Haaland signing of the season, but who has improved the team they've gone into more? Without any shadow of a doubt, it's Casemiro. Like, it's not even close, is it? So, you've probably got to give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. Ian, the thing about... Let's talk about the Casemiro a bit more. The thing about the Makélélé role, as it will be known until the end of times. Now, as some comedians, we have a deep understanding of that role because we're also entirely selfless, aren't we? That's what people always say about us, that we're givers.
I've always been a giver. It's been a trait of my career that I will give up my short time and then get out as soon as I possibly can.
It's your nickname, Ian the Giver Moore. That's Ian, what we call
never knowingly overrun Moore is how I pride myself. It's interesting what you say about Casemiro in that you only notice great players when they're not there. He clearly wasn't there on Sunday. I think he's a great signing, Casemiro, don't get me wrong, but I know that, you know, Man City, for instance, are scrabbling around for money a lot. So in the long term, I think Haaland is a much better buy it because he's so young, and you're gonna be able to sell him on for something like $3 trillion. The way things are going, there's gonna be if you can sell him on, I'm not sure anybody else could actually afford to buy him. A richer nation state, presumably. I've no idea.
I actually think you're going to be quite surprised by that. Like, if you look at the quotes from Haaland's agent and his dad and stuff, it looks like Haaland's plan is to do like about 3 or 4 years in every major league. So I think it's very possible in 4 years' time, Haaland just goes, I want to go to Real Madrid, please. And he's just off. City are going to have to take whatever they can get for him, and that's not going to be hundreds of millions. I think in 3 or 4 years, he's going to go to Real Madrid for a similar fee to what Manchester City got him for. And I think that's the plan from the off.
Well, as you said, Adam, it's not like City are having a bad season, but he doesn't slot into the City way of playing in quite the same way. Ian, I'll ask you this. It's less fitting like a glove and more like a sort of scratchy hat or a really nice pair of trousers you haven't put on since before Christmas.
I think it was an odd signing anyway. It's this kind of we're Man City, we can buy who we want, and everybody wanted Haaland, but without actually considering the way that Guardiola plays. It was a kind of you can understand why they signed him, and I think he was signed purely to win them Europe rather than the Premiership, because they were already champions. They didn't buy him like Adam says to improve the team there. They bought him to win in Europe. And I think having a striker who bangs away goals if you're not in possession all the time, for instance, then Haaland fits the bill. But if they don't win Europe, then it looks a kind of weird signing after that.
Well, I am hopeful that in the next few weeks they'll give up on the league and concentrate on Europe. I think it's the right thing to do for them. but it is. They've scored as many goals at this time last season as they have this season. It's almost a bit of a waste having him. I was thinking, Adam, it's like one of those ridiculous drinks at Starbucks that have sugar, cream, syrup and a cherry. And then they say, do you want a flake in it or some candy floss? I mean, essentially, what I'm saying is Haaland is too much sugar. And if we're going to continue the sugar analogy, wouldn't Kane have worked better? Thank you. I spent a lot of time on that. I did.
they could have got Angel Di Maria, couldn't they?
Oh, hello.
I can't compete with this, boys. This is too high level for me. I think long term, they want to win in Europe. Ian is absolutely right. They've brought Haaland in for those big games. You need a goal. You want it to fall to one player. It's Haaland in Europe and stuff like that. I don't think it will seem a strange signing long term. I think they're still getting used to him being and playing at this new way with a proper number nine striker. For the next 3-4 years, he is going to score an absurd amount of goals for Manchester City.
He is, yeah.
And I don't like saying this, but I think he might be the thing that actually does eventually deliver them that European trophy. I don't think it'll be this year, but I do think in the next few years, while he's there, they probably will get over that line because they've been very close before. And I do think he's what they're
missing. We shall see. We shall see. Of course, there were incredible scenes at the Emirates on Saturday as Arsenal came from 2 down with half an hour to go to win 3-2 with the last kick of the game as the entire stadium went into meltdown and Mikel Arteta had to look after a small child for some reason. The millions watching around the world would have been thrilled by the spectacle, but not in this country, as fans had to either listen to it on the wireless or resort to crime. Ian, you live in France. You live in France. Could I move in with you for the remainder of the season?
Well, you have to pay.
Friend, mates rates? Can we do mates rates?
I could do your mates rates, yeah, but you'll have to do your own breakfast.
I mean, in the United States, they have this arrangement where as long as the game is sold out, you can then pay to watch your own team on TV. You pay your $10, whatever it is, get a code through the telly, and you're in. Adam, there are cameras at all the games. Surely there must be some electronic way of beaming those games into people's homes.
Let's be honest. Arsenal win 3-2 the other day in probably the most pivotal moment in the Premier League title race so far. Just give everyone the chance to watch every game. Start their own subscription service, like you've just said, the way they do it in the US, and go, oh, is the game sold out? Well, give us a fiver or a tenner and you can watch this week's match. It just... Yeah. There's so many ways to deliver this to people.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're absolutely right. The no live games on TV at 3 on a Saturday encourages fans to go to games. A sort of, OK, I can't get to Arsenal, I'll go and see Leighton Orient at home. I mean, Ian, no disrespect to Leighton Orient. Isn't that a bit like saying we can't get a table at the Michelin-starred restaurant this evening? Do you fancy getting a KFC? I mean, wouldn't you rather pay £10 to watch people eating in a Michelin-starred restaurant and get a really nice takeaway?
I struggle with this because I live in a sort of a male dominated household in that I've got three sons and my wife is not into football, and so we're constantly reminded that there it really is enough football on television. We're constantly brought up against this argument. This is why for me the Carabao Cup exists, because I can say I'm just not interested in that. Doesn't bother me really. I think there's enough.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, anyone know who this is? There he is, man in a pub. Lads, any guesses as to who that is? I should say, by the way, of course you know who it is. I don't want to give away the secrets of TV panel shows. But before each show, I send out some basic notes so that people know who we're going to be talking about. So they both know exactly who that is. Who is it, Adam?
It's Eric Ten Hag, isn't it? He's really learned self-coach since Sunday afternoon.
I knew. Oh, if you have comedians on, this is what happens. All right, Ian, are you going to tell me who it is?
It's Alfinger Haaland. Haaland, the Haaland son, waiting for a pass to come forward. He hasn't shaved since that.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Herding cats sometimes. Anyway, it's the ex-Manchester United and Celtic striker Brian McClair, who's decided to go for the look of a man who sits on a mountain dispensing wisdom but doesn't have time to shave. He recently went viral as old man down the pub thanks to this picture. And to be fair, he does look fairly unrecognisable as someone who was once a top-level striker in the Premier League. I think the other guy thinks it's some sort of wind-up. Anyway, McClair has got a podcast called Life with Brian, and 35 episodes in, it's the number one sports podcast in Costa Rica, the home of the sports podcast. Adam, you've got Have a Word podcast doing very, very well. Have you had similar success in Central America? Do you have a big following in Honduras, for example?
We're really good in the Philippines. We're smashing the Philippines. We're doing an arena tour of Southeast Asia next year. Yeah, just because that's actually where the market is. Do you know what I mean? Like, the UK can only take you so far. You've really got to get in to that Asian market. There's a lot of people over there, and if you're not tapping into that, you're sort of wasting a good percent of audience.
Brian McClair was always an interesting character. He never gave an interview in the 10 years he was at Old Trafford. His nickname as a player was Chucky, because McClair sounds like Eclair. I'm not making this up. And there was a chocolate connection. And he introduces himself as Chocrates because, and I quote, I'm a philosopher now. Ian, do you think he's grown a beard because he wants to be known as a philosopher? Because personally, I think an expertise in philosophy, perhaps some grounding in philosophy, is more important than facial hair.
No, I disagree entirely. I think you've got to get your facial hair right if you want to be considered in any way serious in the philosophy game. You're also missing out his entire Blackburn career, by the way, when he was part of the management team.
How many games?
That
How many
took
games
us down.
Blackburn?
I don't know. I don't think he actually played. I think he was in the coaching team when Brian Kidd was manager, or maybe even later than that. He didn't hang around long.
It is an interesting beard look. I mean, I can't personally grow a beard like that. I'd end up looking like the most Jewish character in Fiddler on the Roof, and that is a competitive field. Hearing McClair's nickname was Chucky did make us nostalgic for when nicknames had a bit of thought put into them. Who can forget Chelsea's Chopper Harris or Norman Bites Your Legs Hunter? Ian, you won't get nicknames like that anymore. It'll be Bruno Holds His Face Fernandez or Neil. I look like I've been shot, but actually I'm only staying down to wind up the opposition mope.
The thing about nicknames, I had a look at this on Sunday about the nicknames, and my favourite one is Matt Doherty, yeah, it was De Herto Carlos, which I thought was great. I couldn't get past excellent. That one.
I mean, it's nice that people are making an effort. I mean, most nicknames nowadays tend to be a bit prosaic. They tend to be shortenings of their actual names, you know, Dino, Ober, Aspie. Adam, it's like the whole game's been taken over by Australians, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We've been doing a feature on our podcast, Have a Word, where people send in some of their favourite nicknames of people in their life. And my favourite one that we had sent in last week, someone said there's a really short lad that they work with at work called Anthony, and they all call him Shetland Tony.
I mean, that's absolutely fantastic, isn't it? You know. I mean, I guess you guys would be Morsey and Rosie, wouldn't you, really? Or the Roaster, I guess you'd be, Adam.
I was Rowie for a little bit at school, but that didn't really stick. And then I just ended up just being Row. They didn't even, like, extend it. It was just my surname.
I'm Moro. My nickname Moro. Is Moro. Yeah. Turning a one-syllable name into two syllables. It doesn't make any sense
at
all.
It's not an easy name to give a nickname to. My two favourites... our Mark Goodfellow, who played for Stoke and Bristol City, amongst others, who was given the nickname Freezer, because, you know, Freezer, jolly good fellow, which is pretty good, I think. And fellow comedian and Crystal Palace fan Andre Vincent claims to have invented one size as a nickname for the former Oldham and Crystal Palace defender Fitz Hall, as in one size fits all, although he played for Oldham first, so I know who I believe. Anyway, let's have a game of Who Am I? I give out some clues and our guests have to work out who I'm talking about. Since 2014, I've only played in the Premier League and Serie A. I've won every major trophy possible at an English club. Premier League, FA Cup, League Cup, Champions League, Club World Cup, Super Cup and the Community Shield. And I once scored a hat-trick in a match despite only having 9 touches the whole time I was on the pitch. We'll let you know after the break, and we'll be back shortly with more of this sort of thing.
Join Ellis James and pals down the clubhouse for a light-hearted and entertaining journey through the history of sports forgotten, rarely seen, iconic and hotly debated moments. All episodes available now on the BT Sport app.
Welcome back to part 3 of the Football Zone with me, Ian Stone, Ian Moore and Adam Rowe. Before the break, I asked who am I and I gave these clues. Since 2014, I've only played in the Premier League and Serie A. I have won every major trophy possible at an English club. And I once scored a hat-trick in a match despite only having 9 touches the whole time I was on the pitch. Ian, I'm going to come to you first. Any thoughts as to who this might be?
It's not Tammy Abraham.
It's
not Dimitar Berbatov.
No, it's not either of them. Adam, any thoughts?
It's Mo Salah, isn't it?
It is Mo Salah. I thought you
would
get that.
Against Rangers earlier this year.
What was the thing that gave it away? Was it the 9 touches?
It was all the trophies, actually.
Oh my God!
You know what I mean?
They're insufferable, aren't they, Moro? Now, over in Italy, Jose Mourinho continues in his quest to find a perfect Jose Mourinho moment, and this time he may have hit the jackpot. I'll let our roving reporter Josh Pugh take up the story.
Jose Mourinho booed an under-14 Lazio player this week. That happens a lot. We treat kids like they're adult players. I know of kids that get goal bonuses from the dads. They get a pound every time they score. If that had happened to me when I was a kid, it would have cost my dad like £3 some seasons. And we never see it the other way, do you? You never see adult players being treated like children players. Do you know what I mean? Like, good boy, Cristiano. Big kick, Lionel. Well done. You get 3 points a day, lads. Are going to get you all a McDonald's. You never see it. I think it might work. It never gets any success, does it? You never meet a bloke in the pub like, oh, why didn't you make it as a pro? Well, I could have done, but my dad just didn't shout enough at me from the sidelines as a kid.
Yes, thank you, Josh. He was talking about a grudge match between Roma and their local rivals Lazio, and Jose decided to boo a Lazio child as he stepped up to take a penalty. Ian, It's the only way they'll learn, isn't it?
I've got no problem with it. I've got absolutely no problem with it at all, because so many of the kids are emulating the players anyway. I went to a match on Saturday when my son was in, and people are throwing themselves on the ground screaming at the slightest touch. So if they want to behave like adults, they should be booed like adults. I think it's fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a very fair point. It did make us wonder here at the Football Zone, what's the age cut-off for giving stick to children playing football? Adam, if he was booing a six-year-old, would that be a step too far? I mean, what if the six-year-old was big for his age?
I just think start them as young as possible. Like, if you're going to make it as a footballer, you're always going to have thousands of people booing and shouting at you every week. If you can't take that as a four-year-old, you're not going to be able to take it as a 25-year-old. So start them as young as possible. I'm all on board with it.
Yeah. No, maybe they should stone the team bus when it arrives. Or is that too far? Sorry, lads, it's the only way you'll ever learn what it's like with the adults. Later on in the game, with his team leading 2-1, Jose was accused of telling his academy stars to feign injury. Adam, as I said, it's all very on brand for Jose. But, you know, whatever next? Nine-year-olds holding up imaginary yellow cards? Primary school-age defenders leaving one on the opposition centre-forward?
I want to see one of the dads on the sideline holding a placard asking for one of the kids' shirts.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've watched a lot of kids' football. So has Ian Moore. Here's a little Facebook message shared by Ian on Saturday while watching his son play football. There he is, out watching Mo play football. 10 minutes to go. They're 1-0 up and Mo has yet to threaten an official. Could still happen, mind. Hashtag France football. Well, Ian, is it better in France? I mean, by better, I mean, can you properly shout abuse at officials or the opposing kids or even your own?
Well, I think that more of the abuse actually comes from the kids on the pitch out to the sidelines rather than the sidelines into the pitch. It's a kind
that's
reversal.
Radical.
These are under 17s and these kids are enormous. So then, you know, there's no way I'm going to shout abuse at a French kid who's 6'5" and a better beard than I can ever grow by standing at the side. I'll just dress like a hitman. That's the only way. I'll get left alone that way and nobody bothers me. But Morris has got such a sweet, you know, sensitive person. But you put him on a football pitch. He was at a match a couple of weeks ago and their linesman clearly cheated. And Morris just lost it and went face to face with the linesman.
Oh, yeah.
And the linesman said, I'm 54. What do you think you're going to do? And Morris said, I'm 17. You're not going to outrun me. And
that's God.
That's how the exchange went. And he's not like that.
Adam, do you not hear when Ian's talking about that? He's not that kind of player after somebody's broken somebody's leg in about 14 places.
I'm sick of hearing that about Son Heung-min from Tottenham. Like, because he's always smiling, everyone's like, oh, he's a really nice guy. He's one of the dirtiest players in the league. People saying about him every few weeks because they have to, because he breaks someone else's kneecap.
I'm not getting involved in this conversation, but Adam, you will be getting booked very regularly on this show, all right? Now, while Ian enjoys the delights of rural France, his team Blackburn Rovers are through to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, invoking memories of their glory days in the competition in Elizabethan times. Ian, you've got Sheffield United away in the quarterfinal. You beat them 1-0 over the weekend. You could do the double promotion in the cup, maybe.
It's looking ridiculously likely. I can't really cope with this. I had myself all set up for mid-table mediocrity in the championship, and now they've gone and got my hopes up, and I just don't deal well with optimism at all.
How do you think I'm feeling at the moment?
it's such a surreal thing to happen. We know we had virtually no score at the start of the season. We had a new manager. Nobody was expecting this at all. The cup run has been amazing. I mean, we could go to Wembley twice in the same week in this season. For the cup final, cup semi-final, cup final, and the playoffs. You know, I'm not coping very well at all. I'll be honest with you.
Adam, both our teams went out earlier in the competition, but this feels Blackburn Sheffield United feels one of the games that, as a neutral, I might actually watch. You sort of proper quarter final, playing for the right to go to Wembley and get stuffed by one of the Manchester clubs in the semis.
I seen people talking the other day about like, oh, it's the worst FA Cup quarter final draw in years. I think like it's about time we had a season like this where a couple of clubs break through, and the fact that those two are playing each other, I think it's great. I'd also like to see Blackburn back in the Premier League, because they're one of those clubs that for me just are a Premier League team. There's a few clubs that like when they're in the Premier League, you're like, oh, they're sort of on holiday. They're only going to be here for a couple of years and then they'll be gone again. Blackburn feel like a club that are meant to be there all the time, and they just haven't been for a while now, and I would like to see them back.
Yeah. Anyway, it's time for our Call Yourself a Fan quiz. FA Cup related this week. 5 questions for each of our guests. Here's the leaderboard so far. Yes, Mark Steele came so close to getting 5 out of 5. No one has managed it as yet. Let's start with Adam Rowe. Adam, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Question 1. Who's the youngest player to have scored in an FA Cup final? Is it Michael Owen, Christian Pulisic, or Norman Whiteside?
Michael Owen.
No, it's Norman Whiteside. In 1983, Norman Whiteside, 18 years and 18 days, became the youngest player ever to score an FA Cup final whilst playing for Manchester United against Brighton. I should say he was not built like someone who still had some growing to do. He's also the youngest player to take part in a World Cup. 0 out of 1, Adam. Which was the last non-Premier League team to have won the FA Cup? Was it Leicester City? Was it West Ham United? Or was it none?
None?
Yes, indeed. West Ham's 1-0 victory over the Arsenal in 1980 is the last time a team outside the top division won the competition, but no team outside the Premier League has ever won the competition. Not that the Premier League entrenched the status quo in any way. All right, 1 out of 2. Which is the only Premier League team to have won the FA Cup and be relegated in the same season? Is it Leeds, Brighton, or Wigan Athletic?
It's Wigan Athletic.
It is. It is indeed Wigan Athletic. They beat Man City 1-0 at Wembley in 2013. I went to that game. But they failed to avoid relegation from the Premier League. I was actually at the final and then saw them at the Emirates a week later, and they just didn't have it in them, to be honest with you. I think they've been celebrating a little bit, and who can blame them? 2 out of 3. Okay. Oh, I can't believe this question. In 2001, which club won the first FA Cup final to be held outside of England at the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff? Yeah. Was it Liverpool, Arsenal, or Manchester United, Adam?
That might have been Liverpool on the way to their historic treble. Never been done before or since.
Absolutely. We should have won that game 5-0 or something. But anyway, the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff hosted the final for 6 years while the new Wembley Stadium was under construction. Liverpool won 2-1. Michael Owen scored the winner. All right, that is 3 out of 4. The Liverpool striker Ian Rush has scored a record 44 FA Cup goals in 75 appearances for Liverpool, Chester and Newcastle. He also holds the record for the highest number of goals scored in FA Cup finals. How many did he score in finals, Adam? Is it 4, 5 or 6?
Oh, I don't know. 5.
You're right, it is 5. He won 3 FA Cups in his career, scored in all 3 finals. 2 in each of the finals when Liverpool beat Everton in 86 and again in 89. And his 5th and last FA Cup final goal came in the 1992 clash with Sunderland, which Liverpool won 2-0. Adam, 4 out of 5. Goes straight to level on points at the top of the leaderboard with Mark Steele. When we come back, we'll see if Ian Moore can top that. Welcome back to the final part of the show. Before the break, Adam Rowe scored 4 out of 5. Now it's Ian Moore's turn. 5 FA Cup related questions for you, Ian. Obviously, when these questions were written, your age was taken into consideration as well. So bear that in mind. Question 1. In 1901, this club became the only non-league club to win the FA Cup. Was it Arsenal, Spurs, or Everton? Arsenal, Spurs or Everton?
Okay. I'm going to go by the look on your face, Arsenal.
No, it was Tottenham, actually. Oh. The cup was won. Tottenham of the Southern League defeated Sheffield United 3-1 in a replay after a 2-2 draw in the first game. Question two, Ian. Sorry, it's another 1901 question.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm not that old.
What became a tradition in 1901 for the first time as and has continued to this day? Was it A, singing of Abide With Me, B, attendance by a member of the royal family to present the trophy, or C, tying of ribbons to the trophy?
Uh, 1901, it would have been unlikely because there would have been mourning Victoria. So I'm going to go Abide With Me.
It's unlucky. It was the tradition of tying ribbons. Oh, Tottenham man. Won the FA Cup final and the wife of a Spurs director decided to tie blue and white ribbons to the handles of the cup. Isn't that lovely?
That's sweet.
Question three. All right, you want to talk about Abide With Me? In what year was Abide With Me first sung at the FA Cup final? Was it 1920, 1927 or 1939?
I'm going to go down the middle. 1927.
It was 1927. Sir Alfred Wall, the then Secretary of the Football Association, introduced Abide With Me to replace Alexander's ragtime band. That's great they used
That's
to play that.
That's what they should be happy. That's what...
come on along, come on along. You'd love the Toots to walk out to that, which had been the opening tune for the cup final until that time. Also the year that Arsenal lost to Cardiff City 1-0 when the ball slipped under the new woolen shirt of the Arsenal keeper, Dan Lewis. He claimed the shirt was greasy, although it's possible he just dived over the ball. Anyway, one out of three. Ian, question four. Which team that's still in existence is the only team to have won the FA Cup 3 years in a row? Is it Blackburn Rovers, Blackpool or Manchester United?
I think, is it? Well, I know we won a lot of FA Cups in the 1890s. I'm going to go Blackburn.
But it's, yeah, good. It's good that you did. You did, you won it after you won the competition from 1884 to 1886. They became the second club to win three consecutive FA Cups and remain the only club still in existence. Wanderers achieved the feat 6 years earlier, but they were disbanded in 1883. Like, oh, this football lark will never catch on.
No, they couldn't find a
question
home.
Question five. Question five. Blackburn Rovers have won the FA Cup on six occasions. How many finals have they been in? Ian, is it six, seven or eight?
I know that we've lost. We lost 1960... Eight.
It is eight. They last played in the FA Cup final in 1960 when they lost 3-0 to Wolves. Ian scored a creditable 3 out of 5, but Adam moves very cleanly to the top of the table
well
with
played,
Mark
Adam.
Steele. Ian, you'll be... you sounded really generous there. That was great. Ian, you're mid-table. This is where you want to be. You don't need the hope that will kill you.
Listen, I've told you, I'm quite happy with mid-table mediocrity. That's how I set my set my stall out for.
All right, let's have a catch-up with our adopted Sunday League team, the Newcastle United Supporters Club London. Last time we left them, Danny Ward watched a cracking 4-0 win over Monza. What have they been up to this week?
Hello, it's Danny Ward, and you join me at the Newcastle United Supporters Club London training complex. Now, there's no league match this week, so instead, we're going for an in-house friendly. It's Newcastle v Newcastle. Let that sink in. Simon, it's Newcastle versus Newcastle. Who do you think is going to win?
I think it's going to be tight today, but my money's on Newcastle.
Now, Alan, I've not met you yet. Where have you been all my life?
Oh, heard about. Just wait for you, really.
So in a friendly situation, does it ever get nasty between the lads?
There'll be some bad blood today.
So, as you can see, the game is in full flow. We were due to be playing over there, but we got evicted by the under-11s. Mark, the keeper doesn't appear to have gloves. Is that an oversight, or are they just really hard?
They're just hard as nails, you know.
Kieran, are you defending the corner, or are you attacking it?
Both. As soon as you get the bar, let's come straight up that end.
Yeah! Should have been watching!
That's your fault, that.
That is my fault, that. What are you thinking, Freddie? Now, where do you normally play on the pitch?
I started as a winger and then turned 18, discovered beer and had to go right back.
Newcastle have got one back. Joe, none intended, but you looked half dead when you turned up. Has this match enthused you?
Very much, that and Polish energy drinks.
Are we seeing a comeback? Newcastle score! Kieran, new recruits, any of them sticking out for you?
A couple of them. A couple of them sticking their studs out on me, shouldn't have.
Final score, 5-5. I couldn't be proud of the boys. Si, at the end of the day, it's a 5-5 draw. Is that a fair reflection of the game?
Well, it makes us all friends when we get back to the pub, that's the main thing.
Freddie, it's cuffing season. Are you with woman?
Well, as you know, I'm married to the supporters club. Someone's got to go for a drink with Big Bad Alan.
Alan, you were in the nets, you were running all over the pitch, and for that reason, I know it's on your friendly, but you're today's man of the match.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I did not expect this. Thank you very much. How are the lads? Come on.
And that's a wrap. Newcastle United 5, Newcastle United 5. It's all guns blazing next week for Aston Villa. This is Danny Ward from the Football's On.
Adam, not only did you get man of the match, I think that was possibly the most awkward interview I've ever seen when he said, "Where have you been all my life?" I thought he looked a little bit like he was under police caution. I haven't been anywhere.
Talking to him like he's on a first date and he's found the love of his life.
It's true. I also, Adam, I think I very much enjoyed the moment where Danny conducted a mid-game interview and distracted the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I'd like to see more of that in real life. Maybe we should start getting like fan channels of home teams just like trying to distract opposition goalkeepers during corners and stuff. You know what I mean? Like when Arsenal next come down to Anfield, we just got someone whispering in Alan Ramsdale's ear that his hair looks a bit weird or like his shoes are untied.
All right, well, that's it for the show. Thanks to Ian Moore, Adam Rowe, Josh Pugh and Danny Ward. I've been and will continue to be Ian Stone. Thanks for watching. See you next week.